say if we were putting a list of the most pivotal guys on the Texans heading into the season, power ranking, that sort of thing, Titus Howard's probably pretty high up that list, Seth, right? He's one of the only – did I spit?
No, there's an aphid on my – okay.
You okay?
Yeah. I was about to have a potato blight. Yeah. there's a bug first. On my face.
That's like rubbing his eyes. I'm like, damn, that spit went a long way. Titus Howard's probably one of the more important or pivotal guys on this team, I would think, just as the experience level on the offensive line. He's been a mainstay here.
Yeah.
The versatility, you know, right guard, right tackle. That kind
of thing. And you're in an offensive line room where you're trying to establish a different type of culture. And D'Amico has been pretty open about discussing that, more so than I even expected him to. He just said there needed to be a change in the culture on the offensive line. That sometimes, and you see this over and over again, high school coaches listening have seen this, that sometimes guys just change when all of a sudden they are more in more of a defined leadership role. Mm-hmm. They kind of grow into that and start to become a better version of themselves because they feel that responsibility. And it feels a lot, just in watching from the outside looking in, it feels like Titus might be undergoing that transformation
okay.
a little bit.
Okay, well, let's see. Yeah. Let's take a listen to this interview. I talked to him for about, 7 or 8 minutes yesterday. And posted it. It's online. It's on the Twitter feed. My Twitter feed. I'm sure the station has retweeted it. But here's the audio for that interview. This is me with Titus Howard yesterday following practice.
All right. Hey, Sean Pendergast out here at Texans training camp at the Greenbrier. And I am with Texans. I'll just say offensive lineman Titus Howard because we know you've been bumping around a little bit
for a
few years now. Last few days at right tackle, started camp at right guard. First, before we get into any of that, how's things going at the Greenbrier here?
Oh,
your first trip here, right? Because your rookie
time.
Year was the year after they came here a couple times.
Yeah, it's my first time being here. They always talked about coming here, but we never came. So, I mean, the weather's great here, though.
Yeah, it's beautiful, right?
Yeah.
Especially for you big guys, man. That sweat gets big out in Houston.
I know. Makes practice a whole lot easier.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so this training camp, you started out at right guard. You've been playing a lot of right guard. You bumped out to right tackle a few days ago. I'm not going to ask you if you have preference for either one. I know you're going to do whatever the team asks you to do. But how are you feeling so far about how you've played, just training camp in general so far?
I feel like it's my best training camp so far since I've been here. I had a lot of success at right guard so far during training camp. And then I kicked back out at tackle and been having a lot of success out there these past couple of days. So, I mean, it's been pretty good.
How difficult is that, to make that bump back and forth? What's the biggest challenge, either mentally or physically, bumping back between guard and tackle?
I think mentally, it's not hard because I pretty much, when I learn, I try to learn every position. So it makes it easier so I can play faster. But I say physically, just like more of timing aspect. Everything happens a little bit quicker at guard. Versus tackle, you know, going against guys that are more athletic, you're playing in space a lot more. So the timing aspect of punching, your sets and stuff, all that changes. So I think that's the biggest difference. So I try to get out early every day if I know where I'm going to be at for the day. I try to get some sets in and some punch time and stuff in early. So when practice comes, I don't feel like I'm out of whack.
Okay, so describe that to me, your sets and your punch time. What goes into the whole pre-practice routine for you?
Yeah, pretty much. When I'm in the guard, I try to keep everything short and tight. So when I'm taking my sets, it's not just too many steps. It's just one step. I'm a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I cover a lot of space quick. So when I'm at guard, just taking one step, getting ready to use my hands quick, keep my base and play a little lower. Versus when I'm at tackle, I got to, I got to be able to kick to a junction point. So when I'm at tackle, you got guys that be lined up at Y9. That's a new thing in NFL now.
Yeah.
So I got to find out where that angle is I want to go so I can meet that guy at a junction point and be able to keep the width of the pocket as long as I can.
I know a big theme for you guys is iron sharpens iron, especially
for sure.
When you're at that tackle position and you've got either 55 or 51 lined up across from you. How does that help you prepare for the upcoming season?
It helps me a lot, man. Those guys are very competitive. So it's a battle every day. Mostly the whole time I've been in camp this week at tackle has been me and Will. I accept the challenge, he accept the challenge, and we just go at it. Every one-on-one, every team period, we just try to make each other better every day. But like I said, our DNs are two of the best guys in the league. So, it's only going to make everybody better at practice because, you're going to get the best of each one of these guys every day.
We know you guys are installing a new offense, and obviously new offense, Cole Popovich gets bumped up to offensive line coach. How's that been going? What's been the biggest difference for you guys from last year to this year?
I say as far as offense, I kind of played in an offense similar to this when I was with Bill O'Brien, the similar like play style. It was pretty good, and I like this offense. I feel like this offense fits me and my style of play. But as far as the group, I feel like the number one thing I would say is the mentality. Like having more of a dog mentality up front, and you know, not taking shit for no one. I think that's something we needed these past couple of years, and I'm looking forward to being a guy to kind of, you know, lead the group and show them, you know, this is how we want to play football every day. So this camp, I feel like it's been our best camp as the offensive line, especially running the ball, because we've been able to get these guys moving, especially these past couple of days. And we're just trying to establish that dog mentality. We're just trying to work every day. We're not focusing it on, you know, just what people saying. They said we just want to get better for ourselves. And then once we put the work in on the field, everybody realized, like, hey, these guys have been working hard this whole offseason.
Is that something that you consciously came into this season wanting to be a leader in this room, seeing as you're one of the guys who's been, forget about the offensive line room, you and I were talking before we started recording, you've been with the team since 2019. So you've seen a lot of ups and downs along the way. You've seen a lot of stuff with this organization. Is that something you came into the season wanting to, in addition to the physical stuff, wanting to be a leader and work on leadership as well?
Yes, sir, definitely. One of the things I want to do is work on leadership because, as you can see, we got a lot of young guys on the team. We got a young tackle that we just drafted. We got Blake Fisher. He's a young tackle. We got some young guys inside. So I just want to, you know, help those guys and give them the leadership, be a leader for them guys, because, you know, that's something I needed when I was coming into the league. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, that can just, you know, set a different point for the offensive line, so we can start off fast and not be having to worry about that when the seasons are long. So we can go ahead and establish that now.
How is the installation of the offense going so far?
It's going good, man. They're doing a good job of breaking everything down for us, and all the guys have been picking it up pretty good. We got a lot of smart guys in the room. Like, we got some of the smartest centers it is, and Jared Patterson and Jake Andrews. Those guys are very smart. So I think feel like CJ's doing a good job too of picking up the offense, and he's being quick with the calls and stuff, so I feel like it's coming along pretty good.
You mentioned CJ. What's the biggest thing about him, you know, in this offense for this team, his leadership on the offensive side? When you think about him, what's the biggest thing that you think about with CJ Stroud?
I think about it, CJ's always positive, and he believes in the offensive line. So the thing he's been preaching this year, we just control what we control up front, and he's going to handle the rest. So, yeah. Like, he just put it on us, like, hey, we block and we do what we're supposed to do. We got the faith in him. We know what he can do when we do what we're supposed to do. Like, that's just the number one thing. When we blocked good last year, the offense played phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It's when we didn't block good, we start to struggle a lot. So we know what we got to do up front. It's a challenge. It's not going to be perfect off the rip because, you know, we got five guys that never really played with each other before, but we're going to continue to work every week to get better.
Are you a wrestling fan?
I am.
You are? Okay, because I saw that video. That was my suggestion to the social media team to do the Cena or Cody video, and I saw you were the ones that answered. So I'm like, I think when I talked, so you're wrestling. Who's your guy?
My favorite wrestler all time would be Dave Bautista.
Bautista?
Yeah.
Big Hollywood star now.
Yeah, he is.
Okay. So if you had walkout music, would it be Batista's music or would it be different music?
I say if I had a walkout, it would probably be Randy Orton.
Okay. That's
I
a good
hear
one.
Voices in my head, they come to me, they talk, understand, they talk to me.
There you go. Yeah. And what would your finisher be?
My finisher? That's a good one. Probably Batista bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something that a big guy would do, right? Yeah. Not a submission.
You got to be like a Batista bomb or a choke slam or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There you go. Yeah. Did you watch
SummerSlam? Oh, I would do like the master lock, like Chris Masters.
Oh, like Chris Masters, the full Nelson?
Yeah.
Oh, you would get I can't believe you used to be a quarterback back in the day, right?
Yeah, I was.
How many pounds ago was that?
So when I first got to college, I was like 6'3", 220.
Okay.
I played quarterback, and then I eventually ended up moving to tight end. I spent 2 years at tight end, and then our coaching staff got fired, and we had a new coaching staff come in, and then the offensive line coach had told me, like, hey, I want to make you an offensive lineman. And then something happened in the game, and then they had to make me play offensive line for the rest of the game, and then the rest was history.
The rest is history. Yeah. First-round pick.
First-round pick.
Best decision you ever made.
Yes, sir.
Or best decision someone made for you at the time, right?
He did make it for me because I was mad, man. I was mad, but I eventually ended up buying into it.
Okay, you don't have to you don't have to tell me if there's a play in the playbook, but do you ever campaign at times to put a play in the playbook for you to maybe break out and catch, like, you know, 2 yards?
Definitely.
They had one in there for Laramie last year.
I was jealous. I was like, bro, he's been an offensive lineman his whole life. I'm the guy who got the hands.
I got the hands.
So you know, we're going to work on something. Though.
Good. Sure. Well, that's great. Hey, Texans offensive lineman, Titus, right tackle today. Who knows what tomorrow, but we know you'll be on that starting five. Hey, man, appreciate you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you got it. Titus, we'll flash those H's up at the end, too. There you go.
I always make sure to flash the H's at the end with the guys on those interviews.
You.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I have an insecurity about whether I'm Team flashing spirit. H properly or not. It feels, you know what the problem is? I feel like I'm always like 45 degrees away from making some kind of like white power handset gesture that I don't know exists,
That you're going to have to go back and delete years from now.
It's going to get me fired from a job 20 years from now because it turns out that, like, oh, no, yeah, that's actually the Aryan
it
nation of South
at
Oklahoma.
The time. Yeah. At the time, everybody was
I don't mess with gestures anymore.
That's probably smart.
Remember when they tried to make the okay signal something like that you couldn't
do? That's what I'm talking about. My son was my son had pictures from, like, back in high school when he was making it, like, over his eye and near his leg.
Like, everybody got the, like, everybody was like, okay, hold on a second. This is getting really stupid.
Yeah.
All right.
I gotta
can't
go back
be doing
and,
this with
I'm gonna
it.
Scour
yeah.
my social
no,
media.
No, we're just, everybody gets a, yeah.
So what'd you think of Titus?
I liked a lot of what he said. I liked a lot. I thought the part about that when he talks about establishing a physicality, which they had done and made some progress on in these 2 days of padded practices in West Virginia. 100%. And because it's part of this offense and the way that Kaylee wants to operate. It's that they need to have a physical presence in the run game. And it's not they got to have offensive linemen that can get down and gritty and bury double teams and all of that. So you want to see evidence of it. And I think in a non-tackle environment, you can't do that 100%. But what we saw out there on Tuesday was, hey, there were some run plays where the O-line was genuinely getting some good push up the middle. Mm-hmm. And it's always hard in training camp to really tell, okay, would that have been a tackle? Would the pile have kept moving forward? But you could see the initial surge to where, all right, that's a 4 or 5 yard gain at the very least. And then maybe beyond that, that's great. But last year we just had so many instances of runs that were stuck at the line of scrimmage or tackles for a loss. A lot of the positive plays were when Joe Mixon had to dodge somebody in the backfield before he got up there. That part's encouraging to me because it's one thing to talk about it, but we saw a little bit of it,
Yeah. I'm bullish on Titus Howard this year. I think he's played well in this camp. I think he's got good reps at right tackle.
Yeah.
The last couple days that he's been out here, and I think his mindset seems to have changed a little bit with him being kind of the senior voice in that.
He did. You know, when he was talking about the differences between playing guard and tackle, it's true. Like, I have flashbacks when guys talk about that because from a defensive lineman's perspective, when you play defensive tackle, everything he was talking about, how everything's quick, everything happens in one step, you got to be really quick with your hands. It's like fighting in a phone booth. And then all of a sudden, when you move out to defensive end, you feel like you're naked and alone on an island. Like, mm-hmm. There's just so much space, and the game changes completely. And that's why it's not always – yes, it's harder to find good offensive tackles than it is to find guards, but that doesn't mean that the tackles can always make that transition into playing inside.
Yeah.
It's just a completely different skill set. He's had experience doing both of those things now, and I think just the fact that he's embraced being a versatile player now, it feels different than in previous versions before last year when it just felt like he was doing it under duress and not happy about
it.
That he understands that you got to really embrace that challenge of being a different player when you're on the inside.
Text messages coming in on the interview. Wait a second. You mean to tell me our longest tenured offensive lineman basically started to play offensive line in the NFL? No. He played in college. He came into college as a quarterback, moved to tight end. It's not dissimilar, maybe other than the quarterback part, but the tight end part. Dwayne Brown was a tight end when he got to Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
Wade Smith was a tight end, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh no, there's a lot of and there's
I mean, that's not an abnormal
it's,
thing.
It's not that uncommon that there. I mean, it's uncommon for the guys that didn't even play college football, but there have been some good offensive linemen in the NFL who are college wrestlers.
Yeah.
And then learned how to play. And the difference today versus in previous generations too. Is that most offensive linemen, when they get into the NFL these days, they're very, very, they're much less developed at the NFL version of football than they used to be. There's guys that get to the NFL who have never been in a three-point stance in their entire lives.
Yep.
You think about that. The
air raid guys just put their elbows on their knees.
Yeah, so from high school on through college, these guys have been in two-point stances their entire career. There's a lot to learn, so... That's not and that guy could have meant it as like he's impressed by Titus or that it's somehow a negative.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, there's a lot to learn for these rookies out here because the NFL version of football is just it's a lot different than the difference between the NFL and college is a lot bigger than it used to be.
Yeah, you know what? And just in thinking, too, Titus's journey, you know, he was at Alabama State.
Yeah.
Started there, finished there. And that's probably a big reason why he's an offensive lineman at Alabama State is probably because he was recruited as a quarterback that was at the Alabama State level.
Yeah.
If he was an offensive lineman coming in, he might have been recruited by bigger schools. I can tell you in this day and age, probably by his senior year at Alabama State, he would have had offers from Alabama or Georgia or places like that to go play his last year there to try to bump it. Now, he ended up being a first-round pick anyways out of Alabama State.
I liked hearing him talk about how angry he was that he got moved to O-line.
Yeah.
That's the exact same thing that happened to Tony Boselli. Boselli was a quarterback, and I guess a pretty good quarterback in junior high, but he just kept growing.
Yeah.
And his coach, and I think Boselli's dad was all about, you know, helping his kid become an NFL quarterback. And somebody sat his dad down and was like, listen, man, like, I think he might have flashed, like, the latest, whatever the biggest NFL offensive line contract was at the time.
That's a good thing to do.
Yeah, yeah. And it worked out pretty well for Boselli.
Did Boselli grow up in Southern California? I know he went to USC.
I want to say it was Colorado.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because
it feels like Southern California is the cradle for helicopter parent, quarterbacks.
Yeah.
You know, like say, like the you know the they're all
it's
for all the next Marv Marinovich.
For a lot of linemen in the NFL, they have a similar story. Like I got my freshman year in high school, I got moved from running back to offensive line.
Oh, Seth Payne is a running back.
Yeah.
I would love to see that.
And you're like at the time, you're like that's a pretty big blow to your ego.
Yeah.
And it ultimately worked out for me. It's very unlikely that I was going to be the next John Riggins in the NFL.
Right.
I'm not saying I couldn't have done it, but you know,
Fairview High School in Boulder, Colorado.
Yeah,
good call, Seth.
No, I remember my brother was at a wrestling tournament in Fairview once, and I saw Boselli's
Did he wrestle?
No. Boselli? But I was looking at like the high school's Hall of Fame and everything.
He was in it.
Yeah.
Yep. There you go. All right, Payne and Pendergast, that was Titus Howard. Hopefully you enjoyed that interview. If you missed it, it'll be up on the podcast, so you can hit the rewind feature as well. All right, this has been a very petty week. We haven't gotten to do a traditional petty cast in a couple of weeks because of the two-hour shows, but we did sort of a mini one yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
There's still more petty leftovers, Seth.
There's so much petty out there
Much petty out there. I've got
what
petty,
a world we live in.
I've got petty leftovers, including Kyle Tucker. Not Kyle getting petty.
Pettiness directed towards
Kyle Tucker.
I can't imagine what it could revolve around.
So we'll have that for you. We'll do that coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast. Hey, by the way, Seth, did you see there was a clarification on the smelling salts issue with the NFL?
What's the clarification?
Well, so the NFL had banned teams providing smelling salts to players.
Yeah, pneumonia packets. Yeah.
Because it masks concussion symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, players are allowed to use their own smelling salts.
Oh.
Teams just can't provide them.
I can use my own supply.
BYOSS.
You know what we need to do? I should have thought of this. Oh, we'll have to do it next week. I got to go out and get some. I don't know where you get
ammonia. You want to do a demonstration?
Yeah, yeah, so you can feel just what it does.
I'm going to take them.
Knock you back into your senses, that's
I've
for
never
sure.
taken smelling salts before.
It's rough, man.
Is it?
Yeah, but then you start to get kind of a sick addiction to
Would
it.
Would you recommend taking them before we go on the air at 6 a.m.?
You and I are always fully awake.
Yeah.
Maybe you a little bit. Sometimes you don't get my jokes at 6 a.m. And I refuse to believe it's because they're not funny. It couldn't possibly be that they're not funny.
So you
funny
definitely
at 6
want me to take smelling salts.
I'm going to give you a smelling salt. That's how you know a joke is coming.
Okay. I have smelling salt.
Before I make some reference to Napoleon's aluminum cookware. Where's that? So Mark and John are over here trying to fix this aluminum tent that blew over.
Literally blew across the practice field. It was supposed to be our tent this morning.
So Mark and John are deep in concentration trying to figure out how to break this thing down.
If you're watching on the YouTube, it's right behind us.
And
right now.
Meanwhile, I'm being the annoying guy telling Mark about how back in the day, aluminum was actually a very rare metal. Because of the process.
While he's trying to bend a piece of metal.
Yeah, yeah. So Napoleon had a set of dinnerware made out of aluminum that they only used for the highest of guests, like royalty
aluminum.
And what have you, over the silver, because aluminum was so rare.
Wow.
Until they figured out the process to extract it from extract the ore.
Okay.
Where now aluminum's like, you know, no big deal.
And now the richies
now it's something
get
you
the
use
silver.
And throw, you crumple and throw away.
Now the bougies get the silver instead of the aluminum.
Yeah.
I got you.
I think they appreciated the historical perspective.
Did they? In the middle of trying to bend a gigantic piece of metal with their own hands?
I guess a lot of people might have thought that, a lot of people might have thought that Vandermeer was perturbed and annoyed by me talking while they were doing physical labor.
Right.
I could tell that he respected it.
He was respecting it. He's going to use it later.
It's an analogy for something.
Yeah, yeah. You ready to get petty again?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Shedeur Sanders.
I'm as ready as a Queen Victoria with an aluminum fork.
That was me laughing at your joke.
I keep smelling salts.
Smelling salts. All right. So let's do this. We've gotten petty a few extra times this week. These are interesting ones. We'll get to the Kyle Tucker one in just a second. This is Lewis Riddick. This is going to be me getting petty at Lewis Riddick, who continues to carry water for Shedeur Sanders.
Lewis Riddick, who made the entire ESPN draft cast for three straight days about Shedeur Sanders.
Him and Mel Kiper, the two of them. And Riddick was the one who annoyingly said before the draft that whatever team drafts Shedeur should adapt to what he wants to do.
He's earned
that, is Lewis Riddick said. Yeah, it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Here was Lewis Riddick, who has an issue. Now, Shedeur Sanders is apparently going to start the Browns' first preseason game. Mm-hmm. But he's doing so with very few reps at camp because he's one of about 12 quarterbacks they've got there.
Yeah.
But the other ones are all banged up, so he's got to start in this game. Lewis Riddick thinks that Shedeur Sanders is being set up to fail.
I'm afraid he's going to get on the field in preseason games without a lot of practice reps, and then they're going to ask him to perform these heroic tasks in order to prove that he's worthy of being a starter when he hasn't had enough reps to really get comfortable. That's the kind of battle he's dealing with right now. I know. I've seen it. Dom, you've seen it. We've been in these camps. We know how that goes.
Yeah.
You don't get enough reps. They play a whole half of a game, and then all of a sudden coaches are going, why are you making that mistake? Why aren't you making that check? Why are you doing that technique? Well, damn, coach, I never was in there in practice. You never even talked to me during practice. But now you expect me to know. That's what they're going to expect of him. But if anyone can get it done, it's this kid because he's been trained the right way. But I'm telling you, he is ice skating uphill. He just is, and every time you hear this organization talk, you get that feel.
If anyone can get it done, it's the guy who's behind Dylan Gabriel on the depth chart.
I'll tell you what, though, I do give him credit for ice skating uphill. That's a good visual. I never thought of that. That's a tough one. I honestly haven't heard that one, and I'm trying to imagine it right now.
Not easy.
I think that look. He didn't make it sound like they're intentionally setting him up to fail, but he's just kind of by circumstance set up to fail. It bothers me.
It's the whole I've seen this before kind of thing.
It bothers me and it annoys me because it reminds me of when people were convinced that Gary Kubiak was setting Case Keenum up to fail or didn't respect. When Gary Kubiak was the very one who was giving Case Keenum a chance to make it in the
undrafted
NFL.
Undrafted free agent.
Right, like Gary Kubiak gave Case his opportunity and was like, he brought him into the NFL, and yet people were dead set and convinced that, like, oh, Gary Kubiak just hates Case Keenum. I don't, like, what are you talking about? He's the one that's giving Case Keenum
a
chance.
What on
earth are you talking about?
Yep.
So now the Browns, by drafting Shedeur Sanders, are somehow doing him a grave disservice by also giving him an opportunity to play in the preseason.
Yeah, it's very.
And they're not. Look, this presumes that the Browns coaches are all idiots or something.
Right.
Which might, in fact, be the case.
It could
Who knows?
Be the case.
But that somehow that they don't understand and realize, it's a rookie in a bad position where he hasn't taken a lot of snaps. They account for that when they're evaluating a player.
Do you want to get to the Kyle Tucker pettiness? I'm going to skip down to that.
Yeah.
Kyle Tucker, who, of course, the Astros traded in the offseason for Isak Paredes, who's now out probably for the season, maybe.
Pending PRP injection.
Hayden, who was an all-star before that, though, we should point out. Hayden Wesneski, who is out for the season and getting Tommy John surgery, if not had it already. And then Cam Smith, who is really he's the crown jewel in this trade. If Cam Smith turns into a long-term, viable, big league baseball player, then the Astros probably win this trade.
And he started showing signs of some kind of rookie wall, and yet everybody feels great about him long-term.
Sure.
Having a much better rookie season than Kyle Tucker ever did.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, Kyle Tucker right now is not having a great season. Well, he overall is still having a good season. I guess it goes to show you how great he was at the beginning of the season, that the numbers I'm about to share with you since July 1st still have him at like 140 OPS plus.
Yeah.
Still like 40%
better.
On the season. Yeah. For the total on the season. That he's still a 140 OPS plus, 40% better than the average OPS in the league. shows you how good he was at the start, because since July 1st, he's got an OPS of 624.
Oh, that's below average, Sean.
That's way below average.
Bad. Okay.
That's the OPS that had Astro fans getting ready to run Christian Walker and Yainer Diaz out of town.
That's right.
Earlier this year. He's hit one home run since July 1st.
They probably expected more than that.
I would think they did. Oh. I would think they would. And lo and behold,
at least the team's doing all right, right?
They were, Seth. You know, the funny thing about that, they were. And now Kyle Tucker's going through this slump, and they're four games back in the NL Central. Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah, yeah. So,
at least they got extra years on his contract, right?
No, he's done after this year. Yeah,
okay.
he's done after this year. Okay, so Dozer Dude, who is an Astros fan on Twitter, was kind enough to capture and screen grab a few tweets from Cubs fans.
Mm-hmm.
Cubs have the worst offense I've seen for a supposed good team. Kyle Tucker is just not a good enough hitter to be a team's best player.
Ah.
Suzuki and PCA, Pete Crow Armstrong, guessing on every pitch, and the rest of the guys are average at best. Cannot win anything with this roster.
No.
That's an interesting take, because Kyle Tucker, a good player for the Astros, I would submit was never their best player.
Yeah.
I don't think.
And that's where Kyle Tucker.
He was on his way last year, and then he broke the shin.
Yeah, look, and I'm not going to try to rewrite history or something and act like we didn't want him to,
He was a really good player.
Right,
yeah.
Obviously. But there is a difference between Kyle Tucker when surrounded by all of those other golden era players and Kyle Tucker if you expect him to be the guy.
Yep.
I also, at what point, I hope the Cubs slide a little bit longer so I can tweet something like, hey, Cubs fans, don't worry. Because now you don't have to worry about Kyle Tucker disappointing you in the playoffs.
You're waiting for that.
You'd rather not make the playoffs, because then you don't have to be further disappointed by Kyle Tucker.
Great point. We should point out there's still 3.5 games in front of they're firmly in the wild card.
Yeah.
They're the number one wild card team. The first team out of the postseason is 3.5 games behind them. But that's 1 week if you're not playing good baseball. More Cubs pettiness, Cub fan pettiness. The Cubs' only player with any leadership personality is a 40-year-old who barely plays. You can't pay Kyle Tucker $500 million to be this introverted loser who disappears like this. Introverted loser.
Hey, man,
Kyle Tucker's finding out, man. Cities like Chicago and places like that, they don't play around when it comes to their baseball.
No, no.
All right? Here's one more. This is Connor Barr, whoever that is. Kyle Tucker doesn't deserve any contract, $300 million or above. He can't hit, and the guy refuses to hustle.
Those three,
honestly, Seth, those three tweets, I think, captured the whole negative side of the balance sheet when it came to Kyle Tucker as a Houston Astro.
Yeah.
There was a lot of positive. I got to point that out. Like, Kyle Tucker is an undeniably very good baseball player and at times great baseball player. But if there were glitches with Kyle Tucker, if there were things that made us pause a little bit before we would say, Jim Crane, you got to spend $300 or $400 or $500 million on this guy.
Yeah.
It would be that, are we sure he's even the team's best player? It would be that he's an introverted loser. We never said that, but we did cite his personality at times.
Yeah.
Kind of a milquetoast vanilla personality the refusal to hustle.
The refusal to hustle, which has shown up in the outfield, where he went from being 4 years ago, a really, really good fielder to these last few years, he's actually been a minus. Mm-hmm. And right now he's minus one outs above average in right field.
Yeah. That's not Gold Glove caliber.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And
it's not $400 million caliber.
And a lot of times it just frankly looked – the reason that he wasn't getting to some balls was just because it didn't look like he was trying that hard,
too. Yep. Cubs fans are finding out, man. We got Cam Smith.
It's a damn shame.
Yeah, it's too bad.
I wouldn't have cared at all except that, like, Cubs – I tried to say something positive about Cam Smith once, and Cubs fans came after me hard. Yeah, and I was like, all right, well, we'll just say, like, let me bookmark a couple of these and see what happens.
The trade is aging very strangely because a month ago, or, like, you know, in late June, when Cam Smith was really starting to rise up and Isak Paredes was really helping carry the team through that period where they were missing a bunch of guys, and meanwhile, Kyle Tucker's an MVP candidate for the Cubs, it was like, okay, everybody's happy. I think both teams are, even with the Cubs not having Kyle Tucker long-term signed up, I think back in June you would have asked both teams, they said, we do the trade over again. You know, we would do it. He had the Cubs in position and may still get him back there to where they can make a run in the postseason. And now it's like, I think the Astros are probably feeling better about it, even with Cam Smith's slump, just because, you know, like, okay, this is just what rookies go through. Whereas They traded for Kyle Tucker with the primary thing being him leading them to a World Series this year.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they would have given him a contract.
You got him on a rental.
Otherwise, they would have given him a deal.
Right, exactly. And then you also wonder, are the Cubs actually going to be the team that spends the money to keep Kyle Tucker around, even if he had... Cubs fans could have been just as miserable if they made a really good push, and then, lo and behold, it turns out that, no, they're not going to be able to... They're not going to be able to re-sign Kyle Tucker. They're not going to pay that much money if he was playing well. In right field, Cam Smith, for the first time in his career, playing in the outfield.
You got one of those color charts
right
up.
Field, 81st percentile for range, 87th percentile for arm strength, whereas Kyle Tucker is 35th percentile for range, 62nd percentile for arm strength.
So you're telling me, what's the thing that you just closed it. What's the thing Kyle Tucker is good at on defense? There's a big red stripe.
Oh, it's probably arm value.
Arm value, okay.
Yeah, arm value.
But that's, boy, that's interesting. That is really interesting. Too much blue on Cam Smith's hitting chart right
now. Yeah, there's a lot. I can't do that.
Blue is bad, red good, yeah.
He's got an 83rd percentile for bat speed.
Okay.
Everything else is in the blue.
He's a young man. The bat should at least be swinging fast. It's just not.
I'll tell you what, though. Talk about judgment at the plate from the golden era of the Astros. Chase rate, Kyle Tucker, 100th percentile.
Oh, he
must be at the absolute apex of.
That's really good, right? Yeah. He's not chasing anything.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, God. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We've got a lot to get to still here at Texans training camp live at the Greenbrier in West Virginia. C.J. Stroud met with the media yesterday. Is he going to play on Saturday? What is it going to look like with him having more ownership? How is that going to help the Texans? C.J. Stroud having more on his plate this season. We will discuss coming up next.
It's up to the coaches, you know, whatever they feel is, you know, suit for me. I like to be out there and, you know, get hit once or twice or whatever just to, you know, feel the emotion again. It's a little different than practice, but whatever, you know, D'Amico decides and I'm good with that.
All right, that was C.J. Stroud. The question was, will you play on Saturday? And it sounds like it's still up in the air. We'll find out more, I would imagine, as the next couple days go on. This is a tradition like no other going on behind us over here. Every day at about this time at the Greenbrier, this helicopter comes swooping in. Is it going to be in the background here?
Yeah, they can see it.
Oh, let's see. Okay.
It's
sorry, radio. Sorry, radio people. We're doing... Oh, yeah, there it is.
Showing
right
the helicopter landing.
Yeah. Watch on YouTube. You'll see a helicopter landing right behind us. It kicks up a lot of dust over there.
I honestly feel like...
The helicopter's a medical helicopter, by the way. It's not a... There's not a prominent luminary coming in here.
Yeah, and it's here every day.
Yeah.
So it's not coming in right now. That is one of the drawbacks of up here is if they did have a serious medical situation... They don't have the same resources that you would in Houston where the medical center is just
witch
hop, skip, and a jump.
Is what I was told.
A jump, yeah. They've got a dentist slash butcher slash barber slash surgeon.
Same guy, yeah. Uh-huh. Same guy. So there you go. Helicopter landed behind us over there.
That was what I was going to say. I don't think helicopters annoy me.
Why?
They're just so loud.
They are loud, yeah.
I know everybody wants to have their own private helicopter and everything, but I don't know. It's something about all that noise and dust that you blow up.
They're not very fast either, are they?
The ones that they use, you know, these ones, the ones they use in the oil and gas, like to get out to the platforms.
All the
and
ones
everything.
That they lean over and they kind
of
fly at
badass.
A 45
yeah.
degree
Some of those
angle.
Move pretty yeah. fast by yeah. helicopter standards. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Those are fast. So C.J. Stroud, not sure if he's going to play on Saturday. I'd like to see him play two series on Saturday. And I don't care if it's just run game.
Yeah, I think it's
treat it like a walkthrough if you want, like a glorified walkthrough if you want to. I don't care.
We said with Clinton Ron yesterday that if he handed the ball off 8 times, I'd be cool with it just because a lot of CJ's transition into this offense is learning about how to handle all these spinning plates as he has some more control behind the line of scrimmage. They struggled last year to get up to the line of scrimmage on time and to have clean execution pre-snap. That's looked so good so far out here.
Yep.
And getting those reps and just having CJ be at the helm, even if it's 12 run plays in a row, I think there's value in that.
Literally,
and you put CJ at minimal risk of harm.
Literally practicing getting up to the line of scrimmage with 20 seconds on the play clock.
And then call a timeout. Three plays in a row. Get up to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
Make your mic call.
Yep.
Make any tweaks that you need to, and then call a timeout and get CJ out of there.
Well, he's probably if what we've been seeing out here is any indication, he's probably going to have a new center as well. Like even just getting 8 to 10 snaps to get used to to Jake Andrews. You know, like there's little things that I think there's benefit from where you're not really putting him too much in harm's way.
I'll tell you honestly, because the far end of the spectrum, if it sounds like, okay, pre-snap operation, what kind of a big deal is this? I can tell you in 2002, when it was a brand new team with a brand new offense with a rookie quarterback, and David Carr would end up having six rookies, including himself, starting on that offense, there were periods in practice that we had to start over multiple times because they couldn't get a snap off.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the far end of the spectrum. This end of the spectrum where the Texans are, for all things considered, it's been cleaner in regards of just doing the fundamentals and the basics right than a lot of teams are at this point in the process. So it's not, I'm not sitting here telling you that's an indication that they're going to be the greatest show on turf, but it's it is a positive development. The other positive development from this week is some of the evidence of physicality on the offensive line in the run game. There have been some times where, man, it looks like the O-line is actually getting some push. It's not all the time, and it's not like they're beating the defense or anything, but it's progress.
C.J. Stroud's going to have more ownership in the offense, as we've kind of been discussing. You know, he's going to have more control as to what happens at the line of scrimmage pre-snap. He was asked yesterday how having more ownership is going to help the team.
Being able to, you know, see things that maybe coaches don't see. You know, being on the field, I'm able to have a different point of view. I think that'll be helpful for our guys. And, you know, it's still not going to, you know, just be easy just because we say we're doing it. I'm going to make mistakes. Also going to, you know, do things right. So it's just learning from my mistakes and trying to be better.
There's times where if they run the offense last year the way they wanted to run the offense, there's still times where there's a quarterback might see something pre-snap where he feels like, all right, if this play is going to work, it's only going to work one specific way.
Yeah.
And that receiver better be open and better run the right route. If you have a guy that's operating where he can see things and make adjustments pre-snap, you give him more options, and you give him he knows where his safety valve is. But some of the protections that they called last year, and there were multiple things going on wrong with the offense last year, but there are times where they might have, like CJ might have known from the get-go that this pass protection is going to be a real problem because I know this guy is blitzing. But I also know that there's not going to be anybody for me to get rid of the ball quickly to. So what you're hoping to do is avoid some of those situations and turn those into positives instead of negatives.
Yep. Looking at Frank Ross out here running gassers right now.
Frank Ross runs gassers.
Yeah, man.
Casario runs gassers.
Casario runs gassers.
D'Amico runs gassers, right?
D'Amico walks a lot. I passed D'Amico walking over to the facility in my car.
Yeah.
He was walking over the bridge this morning with a roller bag.
I had a chat with D'Amico last year about the struggle of kind of letting your ego allow you to recognize the value of walking.
Yeah.
Working out with machines instead of free weights at times, body weight exercises, mm-hmm. all of that. It's tough. It takes about 20 years, and usually it's when your doctor starts talking about knee replacement.
Yeah, that's,
and you're like, all right, I guess I'm gonna give it up a little bit, and I'll be like, yeah, walking is a very, very powerful tool,
absolutely,
in your overall fitness regimen.
Yeah, man,
but it's hard when you're a guy like D'Amico that's, you know, it just you feel your entire athletic career, you feel like if you don't feel like you're about to die, that you're not working out hard enough.
Yeah.
And to try to settle into that realm where, like, wait, oh, it's okay to actually enjoy a workout.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, oh, I actually feel like, oh, I'm comfortable and I could do this for a while.
Yeah.
You feel like a wuss.
Yeah.
You know what? But it's better to feel like a wuss than die.
When it's good for you. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Well, because the other side is sometimes people, they'll get to the point where, like, well, I can't work out anymore, I guess.
Yeah.
Because if in your mind it's balls to the wall or nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to try to find that happy medium somehow.
For sure. The two times I've run into D'Amico Ryans in the last 24 hours, he's been by himself.
That's good.
Yeah.
Leaders need to spend a lot of time alone.
He's been by himself. I saw him getting on the elevator last night as I was calling into Area 45. Said, what's up, Sean? And I said, I'm about to talk about you on the air, all right?
Yeah.
I didn't say that to him. I said, just working here, coach. And then, this morning, getting his steps in with the roller bag.
There's times you just need to reflect and just kind of be free of all the influence and all the chatter and everything else and try to get some perspective on things.
Think of ways he can hoodwink his coaches. Like who was it that was talking about that? It was D'Amico himself talking about how, like, how he'll just, like, before right before practice, oh, yeah, Titus, you're playing right tackle today. You're playing right guard.
I would like it if today we found out that DeMeco's not even on the field, that he's meditating on top of a mountain somewhere.
Yeah.
One of these mountaintops up
yes.
here. He's just up there just sitting and thinking and pondering.
Just sitting, thinking. He's got a huge telescope, and he glances into it just every now and then.
Yeah. You
know, there's
always
people are working.
In so many movies, there's a scene where everybody's wondering, like, what's the leader going to do? What's the leader going to do? Yeah. Why isn't he doing anything?
Yeah.
And he's just sitting there, calm, cool, and collected. Everybody else is freaking out, and then all of a sudden he walks in with the plan.
Yeah, that would make me feel good about the upcoming season.
Titus Howard at tight end. That's what he comes in with.
Titus would like that,
yeah.
Based on what he said earlier in the interview we played.
That's Mike Eubanks running right now.
Yep. They've
got a pretty fit. They've got a
this
fit
staff
coaching staff.
And front office with Nick. I mean, they. I would take them in a Thunderdome against all these other NFL teams.
Yeah,
these fat asses waddling around out there.
We had joint practices against the Raiders. Once, and it was in one of the Raiders' dark periods.
Yeah,
and it was, you can almost tell how bad the team was by their coaches walking out.
Yeah, a bunch of frumpy.
It wasn't like, it's good if you got a chubby O line coach or something, and a few of those guys, but they all look, you know, and it didn't help at all. Al Davis, he was old, you know,
yeah.
But he was out there in a walker, but still like all black and everything, and all of his coaches looked like they were just looking for a place to go smoke their 18th cigarette of the morning. Yeah. I like it better when I see it this way.
Yes, for sure. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Up next, two of the Texans' defensive players were on a list that came down from somebody we actually met out here at camp yesterday, a prominent list that bodes well for the future of this football team. We will tell you who it was and why coming up next.